Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
The FT.
The government is introducing junior ISAs, but savers are finding it hard to get a good deal in the current market. Prime property is back in demand, so where are the buyers coming from? And is silver the new gold? We look at a metal that has been quietly outshining the competition. All this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Alice Ross, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Steve Lodge.
Hello.
Tanya Paley.
Hi.
Ellen Kelleher.
Hello.
And our special studio guest, Adam Challis, Head of Research at Hamptons International.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, the government announced the introduction of junior ISAs, special savings schemes for children that are tax efficient. Money put into junior ISAs will be owned by the child and will be locked away until adulthood. The new accounts will replace child trust funds, children's savings schemes set up by the previous government that have now been scrapped. However, unlike the child trust funds, junior ISAs will not benefit from government contributions. So, Steve, is the junior ISA good news for savers?
Well, Alice, I suppose it piggybacks on what has been one of the most successful savings schemes of decades, really, the ISA. So in that sense, it's good, but we don't have a huge amount of detail yet. We do know that the child will own the money, that it's aimed at parents being able to put money into a tax-efficient environment for the child, and the child won't be able to get the money till adulthood. We don't know the amount. It's likely, though, I think, to be a few thousand pounds, the annual contribution limit, investable in cash or stocks and shares as currently. But importantly, it won't have any government contributions. And while some people knocked the small scale of those vouchers, you'll recall sort of £250, £500 in some cases, I think coming down to £50 now in the run-up to the end of the CTF scheme at the end of this year, that actually cost all of us, the government, as part of the deficit pot, if you like, hundreds of millions of pounds a year. So while the government's saying it wants to encourage this thing, it's not doing much in the way of subsidising it.
Mm. So it's hoping that these junior ISAs will encourage parents to save for their children. Is there nothing else in place apart from the child trust funds? Presumably parents can still save for children at the moment if they want to.
Yes, I mean, the common way is through something called a bare trust. But, I mean, while many FT readers and listeners may have heard these things, I think the mass market is not aware of these things, the bear as in naked trust, literally. So, I mean, it's not the same as the teddy bear account as such that you'll hear some of these things described as. But so there are complications around it, but essentially it's a structure that enables the child to be the beneficiary of the money, but the parents to control it, which obviously is a key issue here. That one of the criticisms, of course, of the CTF scheme was that the child would suddenly get to adulthood or young adulthood and suddenly be able to blow all the cash. The underlying thinking behind the scheme, of course, is to set the child up for life, possibly to help them pay for their tertiary education, university education, or at least sort of set them on the road when they start work.
And of course, with an ISA, you can save into cash or equities. And if you're saving for a child, equities is probably going to make a bit more sense because of the long-term growth. But things aren't looking that rosy for cash accounts in general at the moment, are they? Paying very low rates of interest.
No, you're right. I mean, cash accounts now, we're nearly 2 years into a base rate being at its record low of 0.5%. And there was new research out this week from Which magazine, the old Consumers Association, saying that one quarter of all accounts of the 1,200 savings accounts out there now pay 0.1% or less on a substantial balance of £5,000. And half of all accounts pay 0.5% or less. So there are a hell of a lot of accounts out there that aren't paying very much at all.
Is there anything you can do about that? Presumably there are a few accounts that are paying decent rates.
Of course, yeah. I mean, which possibly inevitably says, well, the banks and building sites, you should be doing more to tell people about the poor rates they're getting and actively encouraging them to switch to the better rates, where, of course, as you can get up nearly 3% instant access and as much as 4.5% if you're prepared to lock your money away in a fixed rate bond for up to 5 years. So actually very good rates at a time when base rate is only 0.5. But realistically, yes, it's about savers just doing it for themselves, really, which has got an interesting little tool that enables you to find out the rate on your account. So have you gone to its website? But generally, just being a little bit more proactive would help, and which reckons the savings, the average improvement in interest people could get is more than £300. Mm. So worthwhile.
Yeah, worthwhile. And so if you're saving for yourself or for your child, junior ISAs are coming in from next autumn, I think. Best to look around for the best deals on the market. Thanks for that, Steve. And for more on where to find the best cash rates, look out for Steve's article in this weekend's FT Money with the Weekend FT and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show is silver the new gold. First, though, prime property. News this week showed that the number of £1 million property sales has more than doubled over the past year, according to research from Halifax. There were 2,992 million pound property sales in Great Britain in the first 6 months of this year, 118% higher than in the same period last year. The largest growth in million pound property sales was in London, with a rise of 134% from the year before. So, Tania, where is all this demand coming from?
Well, it's quite interesting when you actually start to look down into the regional breakdown of those figures that Halifax have provided. Obviously, Greater London has been the kind of had the most kind of number of million pound sales, and it's actually had about 1,880 sales, apparently, according to Halifax. And when you look at other areas of the UK, I mean, you've got places like the East Midlands, which has only seen 14 sales in the first half of this year, and then you look down further, and you've got Wales and the north of England that have only had 3 million pound property sales. So you kind of see how it's really the concentration is on London. And I think a lot of that's down to the fact that it's the demand from overseas buyers we're seeing. I've got Adam here. Is that something you guys have seen across your agency in the Hamptons? I mean, is it the overbuyers' demand driving it?
Yes, very much so. The international buyer profile has really really become quite a strong, prevalent part of the market. In particular, since the downturn, when the pound sterling began to devalue, that created a real opportunity for international buyers to access the top properties, the prime properties in London and across the south. So that's something that we've certainly picked up across our network, and you see that in particular with dollar pegged buyers. So that would be Middle East, Hong Kong, Chinese. So with the yuan, buyers that really have a strong affinity with owning property and developing property portfolios, and certainly see London as a great place to park that money.
And a lot of agents have been saying that it tends to be the top end of the market that they're particularly looking at, so properties over £10 million pounds, for example.
Well, I think it certainly varies quite a bit. We see quite a bit of demand from buyers that are looking to perhaps put down property on behalf of their children who are coming here for school. So as a part of that plan, there's certainly investment demand, which is straight out for perhaps lower value properties, but in bulk purchases or in multiples. We see quite a bit of that as well from international buyers. But at the top end, it very, very much is an international market. And I think our current research suggests that it's somewhere about 80-90% of buyers at the very top end of the market, which are accessing prime property.
Steve.
Adam, how fussy are these international buyers? Because I've got a nice property, but it's somewhat shambolic, as you won't be surprised to hear. So, I mean, do they get fussy about things like mixer taps? One often hears that Americans are particularly fussy about the bathrooms and so on, and think we live like...
To be perfectly honest, Steve, at this level of... at the very top end, a million-plus home, people are looking, particularly Chinese, Russian buyers, looking towards new-build property and very high-quality new-build property as a way of really really parking the money, and that's something they're very comfortable with. You would find continental buyers are typically more have a stronger affinity towards historic properties and a bit more character. So you would find those buyers looking towards perhaps more traditional Georgian Victorian terraces. Nonetheless, the modern standards all have to be fully kitted out. There isn't really an opportunity for the same volume of money going towards renovation in that sense. I think certainly international buyers are looking to have fully kitted out and finished and ready to go top quality properties.
And what's the outlook for the kind of, you know, properties over 1 million plus? I mean, are we going to see that demand continue?
Certainly it is being driven to a large degree by the currency exchange issue that I mentioned earlier, and expectations are that the sterling will remain devalued, although, of course, at the moment we've got a bit of a global, almost a currency war. And so where that nets out, I think, will tell you a lot about where the demand for internationals in buying in prime central London will go. Having said that, we certainly believe the fundamentals of London are robust as an economy. We've seen strong indication that where the price is right, certainly buyers are still very active in the market. In particular, we've seen a small surge, if you like, in very, very high-value country home properties. And I think that has a little bit to do with maybe some market hesitation at the moment, and international buyers recognizing that there's a real window of opportunity now, which may close in the next, say, 3 to 6 months as the economy begins to gain its firmer footing.
And are we going to see city bankers start to come back?
Well, certainly the estimates at the moment are for, I believe it's £7 billion in bonus money this time round. That always has found its way into prime property, the good quality mature stock in prime central London and in the wider sort of southwest of London. So invariably that will continue to prop up and support that part of the market. And as long as I think those bankers and wider financial business services employees are feeling strong and comfortable about their jobs, as they should, we expect that to continue.
Great. Thanks for that, Tanya and Adam. And for full details of what is happening in the prime property market, check out the FT Money section this weekend and our website, ft.com/money. Finally today, is silver the new gold? With the gold price continually hitting new highs, rising over $1,300 an ounce, some people fear it could now be overvalued. Investors have been flocking to the precious metal since the credit crunch in search of a safe haven for their cash. But with other metals showing similar rises in value, might it be better to look at silver or even palladium? Ellen, do you think the gold party is over?
Well, a lot of people are speculating now that the price of gold looks a bit toppy, and you're seeing a resurgence of interest in silver, particularly among investors who don't have, you know, $1,300 to spend on a troy ounce of gold. And silver's of much better value. It's considered the poor man's gold. And its price has also risen about 40%, more than 40% this year. And it's now at more than $22 an ounce. So that looks quite attractive. And it has a lot of the defensive properties that gold has, especially at a time when we're facing the prospect of currency wars and people are just losing interest or they're just worried about paper money in general. So yes, I think you should definitely investigate the wider market for precious metals.
Hmm. Does silver have the prospect of going up in value? I mean, you said it's only $22 an ounce, which sounds pretty cheap compared to gold.
There's definitely some further upside in it as well. There's another terrific bet right now that a lot of people are talking about is palladium. And that is because it, in addition to having the defensive properties of a precious metal, it's also used in catalytic converters in cars. And everybody thinks that demand for cars is going to surge in the emerging world and in China when people start to buy, ordinary Chinese start to buy more cars and stuff. And this will just create this massive demand for palladium. So we've seen palladium prices actually rise to more than $570 a troy ounce. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for silver still, but there's even more enthusiasm for palladium.
Hmm. And I mean, that's interesting. So you would buy palladium because it's more a kind of an emerging market story. It's about cars. So it's not, if you were to buy these alternative metals to gold, would it not be for the same reasons that investors buy gold, which is usually for security, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a feeling now that people want tangible assets, and, you know, they're going into art, they're going into commodities, they're going into, you know, there's still some interest in the property market. You know, there's this kind of feeling that, you know, demand from emerging markets is going to buoy the commodities market for years to come. So these are very good bets, and the price of gold should trade at a, within this trading range for some time to come, and so should these other precious metals as well.
Hmm. In terms of how to get access to some of these metals, I know that with gold you can actually buy physical gold and store it in a vault at a bank, or you can just buy an exchange-traded fund. Is it the same options on offer if you want to buy silver or palladium?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. You can buy the actual metal itself. Palladium is very popular now, and for example, my engagement ring is made of palladium. But no, you cannot just go and buy it, you know, through a dealer. You can buy into an exchange-traded fund, and there's been a surge of interest in palladium-backed exchange-traded funds.
Mm, great. So look out for possible future engagement rings in palladium rather than gold. Thanks for that, Ellen. And if you'd like to know more about silver or other metals, look out for Ellen's article in FT Money this weekend. But that's all for this week's FT Money Show. Remember, you can get weekday news updates on our website, ft.com/money, and you can read and comment on our latest blog posts at ft.com/moneymatters. We'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Steve, Tanya, Ellen, and our special guest, Adam Chalice from Hamptons International.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.